Well, cost you. Then I'll pay.
With what? Arya wondered. The outlaws had taken Clegane's gold. But maybe Lord Beric had left him some silver and copper. A ferry ride shouldn't cost more than a few coppers. The ferrymen were talking again. Finally, the bent-back one turned away and gave a shout. Six more men appeared, pulling up hoods to keep the rain off their heads. Still more squirmed out of the holdfast window and leapt down onto the deck. Half of them looked enough like the bent-backed man to be his kin. Some of them undid the chains and took up long poles, while the others slid heavy, wide-bladed oars through the locks. The ferry swung about and began to creep slowly toward the shallows, oars stroking smoothly on either side. Sandor Clegane rode down the hill to meet it. When the aft end of the boat slammed into the hillside, the ferrymen opened a wide door beneath the carved horse's head and extended a heavy oaken plank. Stranger balked at the water's edge, but the hound put his heels into the courser's flank and urged him up the gangway. The bent-backed man was waiting for them on deck.
"Wet enough for you, sir?"
he asked, smiling. The hound's mouth gave a twitch.
"I need your boat, not your bloody wit."
He dismounted and pulled Arya down beside him. One of the boatmen reached for Stranger's bridle.
"I wouldn't,"
Clegane said, as the horse kicked. The man leapt back, slipped on the rain-slicked deck, and crashed onto his arse, cursing. The ferryman with a bent back wasn't smiling any longer.
"We can get you across," he said sourly. "It will cost you a gold piece, another for the horse, a third for the boy." "Three dragons?" Clegane gave a bark of laughter. "For three dragons, I should own the bloody ferry. Last year might be you could, but with this river, I'll need extra hands on the poles and oars just to see we don't get swept 100 miles out to sea. Here's your choice. Three dragons, or you teach that hell horse how to walk on water."
"I like an honest brigand. Have it your way. Three dragons, when you put us ashore, safe, on the north bank.
I'll have them now, or we don't go."
The man thrust out a thick, calloused hand, palm up. Clegane rattled his longsword to loosen the blade in the scabbard.
"Here's your choice. Gold on the north bank, or steel on the south."
The ferryman looked up at the hound's face. Arya could tell that he didn't like what he saw there. He had a dozen men behind him, strong men with oars and hardwood poles in their hands, but none of them were rushing forward to help him. Together they could overwhelm Sandor Clegane, though he'd likely kill 3 or 4 of them before they took him down.
"How do I know you're good for it?"
the bent-backed man asked after a moment.
"He's not,"
she wanted to shout. Instead, she bit her lip.
"Knight's honour,"
the hound said, unsmiling.
"He's not even a knight."
She did not say that either.
"That will do," the ferryman spat. "Come on, then. We can have you across before dark. Tie the horse up. I don't want him spooking when we're underway. There's a brazier in the cabin if you and your son want to get warm."
"I'm not his stupid son," said Arya furiously. That was even worse than being taken for a boy. She was so angry that she might have told them who she really was. Only Sandor Clegane grabbed her by the back of the collar and hoisted her one-handed off the deck.
"How many times do I need to tell you to shut your bloody mouth?"
He shook her so hard her teeth rattled. Then he let her fall.
"Get in there and get dry, like the man said."
Arya did as she was told. The big iron brazier was glowing red, filling the room with a sullen, suffocating heat. It felt pleasant to stand beside it, to warm her hands and dry off a little bit, but as soon as she felt the deck move under her feet, she slipped back out through the forward door. The two-headed horse eased slowly through the shallows, picking its way between the chimneys and rooftops of Drowned Harroway. A dozen men labored at the oars, while four more used the long poles to push off whenever they came too close to a rock, a tree, or a sunken house. The bent-back man had the rudder. Rain pattered against the smooth planks of the deck and splashed off the tall, carved horseheads fore and aft. Arya was getting soaked again, but she didn't care. She wanted to see. The man with the crossbow still stood in the window of the round tower she saw. His eyes followed her as the ferry slid by underneath. She wondered if this was Lord Root that the Hound had mentioned. He doesn't look much like a lord. But then she didn't look much like a lady either. Once they were beyond the town and out in the river proper, the current grew much stronger. Through the grey haze of rain, Arya could make out a tall stone pillar on the far shore that surely marked the ferry landing. But no sooner had she seen it than she realized they were being pushed away from it downstream. The oarsmen were rowing more vigorously now, fighting the rage of the river. Leaves and broken branches swirled past as fast as if they had been fired from a scorpion. The men with the poles leaned out and shoved away anything that came too close. It was windier out here, too. Whenever she turned to look upstream, Arya got a face full of blowing rain. Stranger was screaming and kicking as the deck moved underfoot. If I jumped over the side, the river would wash me away before the Hound even knew that I was gone. She looked back over her shoulder and saw Sandor Clegane struggling with his frightened horse, trying to calm him. She would never have a better chance to get away from him. I might drown, though. John used to say that she swam like a fish, but even a fish might have trouble in this river. Still, drowning might be better than King's Landing. She thought about Joffrey and crept up to the prow. The river was murky brown with mud and lashed by rain, looking more like soup than water. Arya wondered how cold it would be. I couldn't get much wetter than I am now. She put a hand on the rail. But a sudden shout snapped her head about before she could leap. The ferrymen were rushing forward, poles in hand. For a moment she did not understand what was happening. Then she saw it. An uprooted tree, huge and dark, coming straight at them. A tangle of roots and limbs poked up out of the water as it came, like the reaching arms of a great kraken. The oarsmen were backing water frantically, trying to avoid a collision that could capsize them or stove their hull in. The old man had wrenched the rudder about, and the horse at the prow was swinging downstream, but too slowly. Glistening brown and black, the tree rushed toward them like a battering ram. It could not have been more than 10 feet from their prow when two of the boatmen somehow caught it with their long poles. One snapped, and the long, splintering crack made a sound as if the ferry were breaking up beneath them. But the second man managed to give the trunk a hard shove, just enough to deflect it away from them. The tree swept past the ferry with inches to spare, its branches scrabbling like claws against the horsehead. Only just when it seemed as if they were clear, one of the monster's upper limbs dealt them a glancing thump. The ferry seemed to shudder, and Arya slipped, landing painfully on one knee. The man with the broken pole was not so lucky. She heard him shout as he stumbled over the side. Then the raging brown water closed over him, and he was gone in the time it took Arya to climb back to her feet. One of the other boatmen snatched up a coil of rope, but there was no one to throw it to. Maybe he'll wash up someplace downstream, Arya tried to tell herself, but the thought had a hollow ring. She had lost all desire to go swimming. When Sandor Clegane shouted at her to get back inside before he beat her bloody, she went meekly. The ferry was fighting to turn back on course by then, against a river that wanted nothing more than to carry it down to the sea. When they finally came ashore, it was a good 2 miles downriver of their usual landing. The boat slammed into the bank so hard that another pole snapped. and Arya almost lost her feet again. Sandor Clegane lifted her onto Stranger's back, as if she weighed no more than a doll. The boatman stared at them with dull, exhausted eyes, all but the bent-back man who held his hand out.
"Six dragons," he demanded, "three for the passage and three for the man I lost."
Sandor Clegane rummaged in his pouch and shoved a crumpled wad of parchment into the boatman's palm.
"There, take 10.
"10?"
The ferryman was confused.
"What's this now?"
"A dead man's note, good for 9,000 dragons, or nearabouts."
The hound swung up in the saddle behind Arya and smiled down unpleasantly.
10 of it is yours. I'll be back for the rest one day, so see you don't go spending it."
The man squinted down at the parchment.
"Writing? What good's writing? You promised gold. Knight's honour, you said."
"Knights have no bloody honour. Time you learn that, old man."
The hound gave Stranger the spur and galloped off through the rain. The ferryman threw curses at their backs, and one or two threw stones. Clegane ignored rocks and words alike, and before long they were lost in the gloom of the trees, the river a dwindling roar behind them.
"The ferry won't cross back till morning," he said, "and that lot won't be taking paper promises from the next fools to come along. If your friends are chasing us, they're going to need to be bloody strong swimmers."
Arya huddled down and held her tongue. Velar Magullus, she thought sullenly. Sir Ilion, Sir Merin, King Joffrey, Queen Cersei, Dunstan, Poliver, Raff the Sweetling, Sir Gregor, and the Tickler, and the Hound.
The Hound. The Hound.
By the time the rain stopped and the clouds broke, she was shivering and sneezing so badly that Clegane called a halt for the night and even tried to make a fire. The wood they gathered proved too wet, though. Nothing he tried was enough to make the spark catch. Finally, he kicked it all apart in disgust.
7 bloody hells, he swore. I hate fires.
They sat on damp rocks beneath an oak tree, listening to the slow patter of water dripping from the leaves as they ate a cold supper of hard bread, mouldy cheese, and smoked sausage. The hound sliced the meat with his dagger and narrowed his eyes when he caught Arya looking at the knife.
Don't even think about it.
I wasn't,
she lied. He snorted to show what he thought of that, but he gave her a thick slice of sausage. Arya worried it with her teeth, watching him all the while.
I never beat your sister, the hound said, but I'll beat you if you make me. Stop trying to think up ways to kill me. None of it will do you a bit of good.
She had nothing to say to that. She gnawed on the sausage and stared at him coldly.
Hard as stone, she thought. At least you look at my face. I'll give you that, you little she-wolf. How'd you like it?
I don't. It's all burned and ugly.
Clegane offered her a chunk of cheese and the point of his dagger.
You're a little fool. What good would it do you if you did get away? You'd just get caught by someone worse.
I would not, she insisted. There is no one worse.
You never knew my brother. Gregor once killed a man for snoring. His own man.
When he grinned, the burn side of his face pulled tight, twisting his mouth in a queer, unpleasant way. He had no lips on that side, and only the stump of an ear.
I did so know your brother.
Maybe the mountain was worse, now that Arya thought about it. Him and Dunstan and Poliver and Raff the Sweetling and the Tickler. The hound seemed surprised.
And how would Ned Stark's precious little daughter come to know the likes of them? Gregor never brings his pet rats to court.
I know them from the village.
She ate the cheese and reached for a hunk of hard bread. The village by the lake, where they caught Gendry, me, and Hot Pie.
They caught Lummy Greenhands too, but Raff the Sweetling killed him because his leg was hurt.
Clegane's mouth twitched.
Caught you? My brother caught you?
That made him laugh. A sour sound, part rumble and part snarl.
Gregor never knew what he had, did he? He couldn't have, or he would have dragged you back, kicking and screaming, to King's Landing and dumped you in Cersei's lap. Oh, that's bloody sweet. I'll be sure and tell him that before I cut his heart out.
It wasn't the first time he had talked of killing the Mountain.
But he's your brother,
Arya said dubiously.
Didn't you ever have a brother you wanted to kill?
He laughed again.
Or maybe a sister?
He must have seen something in her face then, for he leaned closer.
Sansa? That's it, isn't it? The wolf bitch wants to kill the pretty bird.
No, Arya spat back at him. I'd like to kill you.
Because I hacked your little friend in two? I've killed a lot more than him, I promise you. You think that makes me some monster? Well, maybe it does. But I saved your sister's life, too. The day the mob pulled her off her horse, I cut through them and brought her back to the castle, else she would have gotten what Lolly Stoutworth got. And she sang for me. You didn't know that, did you? Your sister sang me a sweet little song.
You're lying, she said at once.
You don't know half as much as you think you do. The Blackwater! Where in Seven Hills do you think we are? Where do you think we're going?
The scorn in his voice made her hesitate.
Back to King's Landing, she said. You're bringing me to Joffrey and the Queen.
That was wrong, she realized all of a sudden, just from the way he asked the questions. But she had to say something.
Stupid, blind little wolf bitch.
His voice was rough and hard as an iron rasp.
Bugger Joffrey, bugger the Queen, and bugger that twisted little gargoyle she calls a brother. I'm done with their city, done with their Kingsguard, done with Lannisters. What's a dog to do with lions, I ask you?
He reached for his waterskin, took a long pull. As he wiped his mouth, he offered the skin to Arya and said,
The river was a trident, girl. The trident, not the Blackwater. Make the map in your head, if you can. On the morrow, we should reach the King's Road. We'll make good time after that. Straight up to the Twins. It's going to be me who hands you over to that mother of yours. Not the noble Lightning Lord, or that flaming fraud of a priest, the Munster.
He grinned at the look on her face.
You think your outlaw friends are the only ones can smell a ransom? Dondarrion took my gold, so I took you. You're worth twice what they stole from me, I'd say. Maybe even more, if I sold you back to the Lannisters like you fear. But I won't. Even a dog gets tired of being kicked. If this young wolf has the wits the guards gave a toad, he'll make me a lordling, and beg me to enter his service. He needs me, though he may not know it yet. Maybe I'll even kill Gregor for him. He'd like that.
He'll never take you, she spat back. Not you.
Then I'll take as much gold as I can carry, laugh in his face, and ride off. If he doesn't take me, he'd be wise to kill me, but he won't. Too much his father's son, from what I hear. Fine with me. Either way, I'll win, eh? And so do you, she-wolf. So stop whimpering and snapping at me. I'm sick of it. Keep your mouth shut and do as I tell you. And maybe we'll even be in time for your uncle's bloody wedding.
This is John Lee. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of A Feast for Crows, Book 4 of A Song of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin. This program was produced by Janet Stark and directed by Cassandra Campbell. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2000 by George R. R. Martin. Production copyright 2005. Random House, Inc.
Eddard. He was walking through the crypts beneath Winterfell, as he had walked 1,000 times before. The kings of Winter watched him pass with eyes of ice, and the dire wolves at their feet turned their great stone heads and snarled. Last of all, he came to the tomb, where his father slept, with Brandon and Lyanna beside him. "Promise me, Ned," Lyanna's statue whispered. She wore a garland of pale blue roses, and her eyes wept blood. Eddard Stark jerked upright, his heart racing, the blankets tangled around him. The room was black as pitch, and someone was hammering on the door. "Lord Eddard," a voice called loudly. "A moment." Groggy and naked, he stumbled his way across the darkened chamber. When he opened the door, he found Tomard with an upraised fist and Cain with a taper in hand. Between them stood the king's own steward. The man's face might have been carved of stone, so little did it show. "My lord hand," he intoned, "His grace, the king, commands your presence at once." Sir Robert had returned from his hunt. It was long past time. "I shall need a few moments to dress." Ned left the man waiting without. Cairn helped him with his clothes. White linen tunic and grey cloak, trousers slit open down his plaster-sheathed leg, his badge of office, and last of all, a belt of heavy silver links. He sheathed the Valyrian dagger at his waist. The Red Keep was dark and still, as Cain and Tomard escorted him across the inner bailey. The moon hung low over the walls, ripening toward full. On the ramparts, a guardsman in a gold cloak walked his rounds. The royal apartments were in Maegor's Holdfast, a massive square fortress that nestled in the heart of the Red Keep, behind walls 12 foot thick and a dry moat lined with iron spikes, a castle within a castle. Sir Boris Blunt guarded the far end of the bridge, white-steeled armour ghostly in the moonlight. Within, Ned passed two other knights of the King's Guard. Sir Preston Greenfield stood at the bottom of the steps, and Sir Barristan Selmy waited at the door of the King's bedchamber. Three men in white cloaks, he thought, remembering, and a strange chill went through him. Sir Barristan's face was as pale as his armour. Ned had only to look at him to know that something was dreadfully wrong. The royal steward opened the door. "Lord Eddard Stark, the hand of the king," he announced. "Bring him here," Robert's voice called, strangely thick. Fires blazed in the twin hearths at either end of the bedchamber, filling the room with a sullen red glare. The heat within was suffocating. Robert lay across the canopied bed. At the bedside hovered Grand Maester Pycelle, while Lord Renly paced restlessly before the shuttered windows. Servants moved back and forth, feeding logs to the fire and boiling wine. Cersei Lannister sat on the edge of the bed beside her husband. Her hair was tousled, as if from sleep, but there was nothing sleepy in her eyes. They followed Ned as Tomard and Cain helped him cross the room. He seemed to move very slowly, as if he were still dreaming. The king still wore his boots. Ned could see dried mud and blades of grass clinging to the leather where Robert's feet stuck out beneath the blanket that covered him. A green doublet lay on the floor, slashed open and discarded, the cloth crusted with red-brown stains. The room smelled of smoke and blood and death. "Ned," the king whispered when he saw him. His face was pale as milk.
"Come closer."
His men brought him close. Ned steadied himself with a hand on the bedpost. He had only to look down at Robert to know how bad it was.
"What?"
he began. his throat clenched.
A boar.
Lord Renly was still in his hunting greens, his cloak spattered with blood.
A devil,
the king husked.
My own fault. Too much wine. Damn me to hell. Miss my thrust.
And where were the rest of you? Ned demanded of Lord Renly. Where were Sir Barristan and the king's guard?
Renly's mouth twitched. My brother commanded us to stand aside and let him take the boar alone.
Eddard Stark lifted the blanket. They had done what they could to close him up, but it was nowhere near enough. The boar must have been a fearsome thing. It had ripped the king from groin to nipple with its tusks. The wine-soaked bandages that Grand Maester Pycel had applied were already black with blood, and the smell off the wound was hideous. Ned's stomach turned. He let the blanket fall.
Stinks, Robert said. The stink of death. Don't think I can't smell it. Bastard did me good, eh? But I paid him back in kind, Ned.
The king's smile was as terrible as his wound, his teeth red.
Drove a knife right through his eye. Ask them if I didn't. Ask them.
Truly, Lord Renly murmured, we brought the carcass back with us, at my brother's command.
For the feast, Robert whispered. Now leave us, the lot of you. I need to speak with Ned.
Robert, my sweet lord, Cersei began.
I said leave,
Robert insisted, with a hint of his old fierceness.
What part of that don't you understand, woman?
Cersei gathered up her skirts and her dignity and led the way to the door. Lord Renly and the others followed. Grand Maester Pycelle lingered, his hand shaking as he offered the king a cup of thick white liquid.
The milk of the puppy, your grace, he said. Drink for your pain.
Robert knocked the cup away with the back of his hand.
Away with you! I'll sleep soon enough. All full, get out.
Grand Maester Pycelle gave Ned a stricken look as he shuffled from the room.
Damn you, Robert,
Ned said when they were alone. His leg was throbbing so badly he was almost blind with pain, or perhaps it was grief that fogged his eyes. He lowered himself to the bed beside his friend.
Why do you always have to be so headstrong?
Oh, fuck you, Ned,
the king said hoarsely.
I killed the bastard, didn't I?
A lock of matted black hair fell across his eyes as he glared up at Ned.
Ought to do the same for you. Can't leave a man to hunt in peace. Sir Robar found me. Gregor's head, ugly thought. Never told the hound. Let Cersei surprise him.
His laugh turned into a grunt as a spasm of pain hit him.
Gods have mercy, he muttered, swallowing his agony. That girl Daenerys, only a child, you were right. That's why the girl... The guard sent the boar, sent to punish me.
The king coughed, bringing up blood.
Wrong. I was wrong. I am only a girl. Varys, Littlefinger, even my brother, worthless. No one to tell me no but you, Ned, only you.
He lifted his hand, the gesture pained and feeble.
Paper and ink, there on the table. Write what I tell you.
Ned smoothed the paper out across his knee and took up the quill. At your command, your grace.
This is the will and word of Robert of House Baratheon, the first of his name, King of the Andals and all the rest. Put in the damn titles, you know how it goes. I do hereby command Eddard of House Stark, Lord of Winterfell, and Hand of the King, to serve as Lord Regent and Protector of the Realm upon my death, to rule in my stead, until my son Joffrey does come of age.
Robert, Joffrey is not your son, he wanted to say, but the words would not come. The agony was written too plainly across Robert's face. He could not hurt him more. So Ned bent his head and wrote. But where the king had said, my son Joffrey, he scrawled, "My heir," instead. The deceit made him feel soiled. "The lies we tell for love," he thought. "May the gods forgive me." "What else would you have me say?"
"Say? Whatever you need to protect and defend, gods old and new. You have the words, right? I'll sign it. You give it to the council when I'm dead."
"Robert," Ned said, in a voice thick with grief,
"you must not do this. Don't die on me. The realm needs you."
Robert took his hand, fingers squeezing hard.
"You are such a bad liar, Ned Stark," he said through his pain. The realm knows what a wretched king I've been. Bad as Ares, the gods spare me."
"No," Ned told his dying friend, "not so bad as Ares, your grace. Not near so bad as Ares." Robert managed a weak red smile.
"At the least, they will say, this last thing, this I did right. You won't fear me. You'll rule now. You'll hate it worse than I did, but you'll do well. Are you done with the scribbling?"
"Yes, your grace." Ned offered Robert the paper. The king scrawled his signature blindly, leaving a smear of blood across the letter. The seal should be witnessed.
"Serve the boar at my funeral feast," Robert rasped. "Apple in his mouth. Skin seared crisp. Eat the bastard. Don't care if you choke on him. Promise me, Ned."
"I promise. Promise me, Ned," Lyanna's voice echoed.
"The girl,"
the king said,
"Daenerys, let her live. If you can, if it not too late. Talk to them, Varys, Littlefinger. Don't let them kill her. And help my son, Ned. Make him be better than me."
He winced.
"Gods, have mercy."
"They will, my friend," Ned said. "They will." The king closed his eyes and seemed to relax.
"Killed by a pig," he muttered. "Ought to laugh, but it hurts too much."
Ned was not laughing. "Shall I call them back?" Robert gave a weak nod.
"As you will. Gods, why is it so cold in here?"
The servants rushed back in and hurried to feed the fires. The queen had gone. That was some small relief, at least. If she had any sense, Cersei would take her children and fly before the break of day, Ned thought. She had lingered too long already. King Robert did not seem to miss her. He bid his brother Renly and Grand Maester Pycelle to stand in witness as he pressed his seal into the hot yellow wax that Ned had dripped upon his letter.
"Now give me something for the pain, and let me die."
Hurriedly, Grand Maester Pycelle mixed him another draught of the milk of the puppy. This time the king drank deeply. His black beard was beaded with thick white droplets when he threw the empty cup aside.
"Will I dream?"
Ned gave him his answer.
"You will, my lord." "Good," he said, smiling. "I will give Lyanna your love, Ned. Take care of my children for me."
The words twisted in Ned's belly like a knife. For a moment, he was at a loss. He could not bring himself to lie. Then he remembered the bastards. Little Barra at her mother's breast, Maya in the Vale, Gendry at his forge, and all the others. "I shall guard your children as if they were my own," he said slowly. Robert nodded and closed his eyes. Ned watched his old friend sag softly into the pillows as the milk of the poppy washed the pain from his face. Sleep took him. Heavy chains jangled softly as Grand Maester Pycelle came up to Ned.
I will do all in my power, my lord, but the wound has mortified. It took them 2 days to get him back. By the time I saw him, it was too late. I can lessen his grace's suffering, but only the gods can heal him now.
How long? Ned asked.
By rights, he should be dead already. I have never seen a man cling to life so fiercely.
My brother was always strong, Lord Renly said. Not wise, perhaps, but strong. In the sweltering heat of the bedchamber, his brow was slick with sweat. He might have been Robert's ghost as he stood there, young and dark and handsome. He slew the boar. His entrails were sliding from his belly, yet somehow he slew the boar. His voice was full of wonder. Robert was never a man to leave the battleground, so long as a foe remained standing, Ned told him. Outside the door, Sir Barristan Selmyr still guarded the tower steps. Maester Pycelle has given Robert the milk of the poppy, Ned told him. See that no one disturbs his rest without leave from me.
It shall be as you command, my lord.
Sir Barristan seemed old beyond his years.
I have failed my sacred trust.
Even the truest knight cannot protect a king against himself, Ned said. Robert loved to hunt boar. I have seen him take 1,000 of them. He would stand his ground without flinching, his legs braced, his great spear in his hands, and as often as not he would curse the boar as it charged, and wait until the last possible second, until it was almost on him, before he killed it with a single sure and savage thrust. No one could know this one would be his death.
You are kind to say so, Lord Eddard.
The king himself said as much. He blamed the wine. The white-haired knight gave a weary nod.
His grace was reeling in his saddle by the time we flushed the boar from his lair, yet he commanded us all to stand aside.
I wonder, Sir Barristan, said Varys so quietly, who gave the king this wine?
Ned had not heard the eunuch approach, but when he looked around, there he stood. He wore a black velvet robe that brushed the floor, and his face was freshly powdered.
The wine was from the king's own skin, Sir Barristan said. Only one skin? Hunting is such thirsty work. I did not keep count more than one, for a certainty. His squire would fetch him a fresh skin whenever he required it. Such a dutiful boy, said Varys, to make certain his grace did not lack for refreshment.
Ned had a bitter taste in his mouth. He recalled the two fair-haired boys Robert had sent chasing after a breastplate stretcher. The king had told everyone the tale that night of the feast, laughing until he shook. Which squire?
The elder, said Sir Barristan, Lancel.
I know the lad well, said Varys. A stalwart boy, Sir Kevin Lannister's son, nephew to Lord Tywin, and cousin to the Queen. I hope the dear sweet lad does not blame himself. Children are so vulnerable in the innocence of their youth. How well do I remember?
Certainly Varys had once been young. Ned doubted that he'd ever been innocent. You mentioned children. Robert had a change of heart concerning Daenerys Targaryen. Whatever arrangements you made, I want unmade, at once.
Alas, said Varys, at once may be too late. I fear those birds have flown. But I shall do what I can, my lord, with your leave.
He bowed and vanished down the steps, his soft-soled slippers whispering against the stone as he made his descent. Cain and Tamar were helping Ned across the bridge when Lord Renly emerged from Maegor's holdfast.
Lord Eddard, he called after Ned, a moment, if you'll be so kind.
Ned stopped. As you wish. Renly walked to his side. Send your men away. They met in the centre of the bridge, the dry moat beneath them. Moonlight silvered the cruel edges of the spikes that lined its bed. Ned gestured. Tamard and Cain bowed their heads and backed away respectfully.
Lord Renly glanced warily at Sir Boris at the far end of the span, at Sir Preston in the doorway behind them.
"That letter," he leaned close, "was it the Regency? As my brother named you protector?"
He did not wait for reply.
"My lord, I have 30 men in my personal guard, and other friends besides, knights and lords. Give me an hour, and I can put 100 swords in your hand."
"And what should I do with 100 swords, my lord?"
"Strike! Now, while the castle sleeps."
Renly looked back at Sir Boris again and dropped his voice to an urgent whisper.
"We must get Geoffrey away from his mother and take him in hand. Protector or no, the man who holds the king holds the kingdom. We should seize Marcella and Tommen as well. Once we have our children, Cersei will not dare oppose us. The council will confirm you as Lord Protector and make Geoffrey your ward."
Ned regarded him coldly. "Robert is not dead yet. The guards may spare him. If not, I shall convene the council to hear his final words and consider the matter of the succession. But I will not dishonour his last hours on earth by shedding blood in his halls and dragging frightened children from their beds." Lord Renly took a step back, taut as a bowstring.
"Every moment you delay gives Cersei another moment to prepare. By the time Robert dies, it may be too late for both of us."
"Then we should pray that Robert does not die."
"Small chance of that," said Renly.
"Sometimes the gods are merciful."
"The Lannisters are not."
Lord Renly turned away and went back across the moat to the tower where his brother lay dying. By the time Ned returned to his chambers, he felt weary and heartsick. Yet there was no question of his going back to sleep. Not now. "When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die," Cersei Lannister had told him in the Godswood. He found himself wondering if he had done the right thing by refusing Lord Renly's offer. He had no taste for these intrigues, and there was no honour in threatening children. And yet, if Cersei elected to fight rather than flee, he might well have need of Renly's 100 swords, and more besides. "I want Littlefinger," he told Kane. "If he's not in his chambers, take as many men as you need and search every wine sink and whorehouse in King's Landing until you find him. Bring him to me before break of day." Kane bowed and took his leave, and Ned turned to Tomard. "The Wind Witch sails on the evening tide. Have you chosen the escort?"
10 men with Porter in command.
20, and you will command," Ned said. Porter was a brave man, but headstrong. He wanted someone more solid and sensible to keep watch over his daughters.
"As you wish, my lord," Tom said. "Can't say I'll be sad to see the back of this place. I miss the wife."
"You will pass near Dragonstone when you turn north. I need you to deliver a letter for me." Tom looked apprehensive.
"To Dragonstone, my lord?"
The island fortress of House Targaryen had a sinister repute. "Tell Captain Koss to hoist my banner as soon as he comes in sight of the island. They may be wary of unexpected visitors. If he is reluctant, offer him whatever it takes. I will give you a letter to place into the hand of Lord Stannis Baratheon. No one else. Not his steward, not the captain of his guard, nor his lady wife, but only Lord Stannis himself."
"As you command, my lord."
When Tomard had left him, Lord Eddard Stark sat staring at the flame of the candle that burned beside him on the table. For a moment, his grief overwhelmed him. He wanted nothing so much as to seek out the Godswood, to kneel before the Heart Tree and pray for the life of Robert Baratheon, who had been more than a brother to him. Men would whisper afterwards that Eddard Stark had betrayed his king's friendship and disinherited his sons. He could only hope that the gods would know better, and that Robert would learn the truth of it in the land beyond the grave. Ned took out the king's last letter, a roll of crisp white parchment sealed with golden wax, a few short words, and a smear of blood. How small the difference between victory and defeat, between life and death. He drew out a fresh sheet of paper and dipped his quill in the inkpot. "To His Grace, Stannis of the House Baratheon," he wrote, "by the time you receive this letter, your brother Robert, our king these past 15 years, will be dead. He was savaged by a boar whilst hunting in the Kingswood." The letters seemed to writhe and twist on the paper as his hand trailed to a stop. Lord Tywin and Sir Jaime were not men to suffer disgrace meekly. They would fight rather than flee. No doubt Lord Stannis was wary after the murder of John Arryn, but it was imperative that he sail for King's Landing at once with all his power before the Lannisters could march. Ned chose each word with care. When he was done, he signed the letter, "Eddard Stark, Lord of Winterfell, Hand of the King, and Protector of the Realm," blotted the paper, folded it twice, and melted the sealing wax over the candle flame. His regency would be a short one, he reflected, as the wax softened. The new king would choose his own hand. Ned would be free to go home. The thought of Winterfell brought a wan smile to his face. He wanted to hear Bran's laughter once more, to go hawking with Rob, to watch Rickon at play. He wanted to drift off to a dreamless sleep in his own bed, with his arms wrapped tight around his lady, Catelyn. Cain returned, as he was pressing the direwolf seal down into the soft white wax. Desmond was with him, and between them, Littlefinger. Ned thanked his guards and sent them away. Lord Petyr was clad in a blue velvet tunic with puffed sleeves, his silvery cape patterned with mockingbirds. "I suppose congratulations are in order," he said as he seated himself. Ned scowled. "The king lies wounded and near to death." "I know," Littlefinger said. "I also know that Robert has named you Protector of the Realm." Ned's eyes flicked to the king's letter on the table before him, its seal unbroken. "And how is it you know that, my lord?" "Varys hinted as much," Littlefinger said, "and you have just confirmed it." Ned's mouth twisted in anger. "Damn Varys and his little birds! Catelyn spoke truly. The man has some black art. I do not trust him."
"Excellent, your learning," Littlefinger leaned forward. "Yet I'll wager you did not drag me here in the black of night to discuss the eunuch."
"No," Ned admitted. "I know the secret John Arryn was murdered to protect. Robert will leave no true-born son behind him. Joffrey and Tommen are Jaime Lannister's bastards, born of his incestuous union with the Queen." Littlefinger lifted an eyebrow. "Shocking," he said, in a tone that suggested he was not shocked at all.
"The girl as well. No doubt. So when the king dies,
the throne by rights passes to Lord Stannis, the elder of Robert's two brothers." Lord Petyr stroked his pointed beard as he considered the matter.
"So it would seem, unless,
my lord, there's no seeming to this. Stannis is the heir. Nothing can change that."
"Stannis cannot take the throne without your help. If you're wise, you make certain Joffrey succeeds."
Ned gave him a stony stare. "Have you no shred of honour?"
"Oh, a shred, surely,"
Littlefinger replied negligently.
"Hear me out. Stannis is no friend of yours, nor of mine. Even his brothers can scarcely stomach him. The man is iron, hard and unyielding. He'll give us a new hand and a new council for a certainty. No doubt he'll thank you for handing him the crown, but he won't love you for it, and his ascent will mean war. Stannis cannot rest easy on the throne until Cersei and her bastards are dead. Do you think Lord Tywin will sit idly while his daughter's head is measured for a spike?
Castle Rock will rise, and not alone. Robert found it in him to pardon men who serve King Ares, so long as they did him fealty. Stannis is less forgiving. He will not have forgotten the siege of Storm's End, and the lords Tyrell and Redwine dare not. Every man who fought beneath the dragon banner, or rose with Balin Greyjoy, will have good cause to fear. Seat Stannis on the Iron Throne, and I promise you, the realm will bleed. Now look on the other side of the coin. Joffrey is but 12, and Robert gave you the regency, my lord. You are the hand of the king, and protector of the realm. The power is yours, Lord Stark. All you need do is reach out and take it. Make your peace with the Lannisters, release the imp, wed Joffrey to your Sansa, wed your younger girl to Prince Tommen, and your heir to Marcella. It will be 4 years before Joffrey comes of age. By then, he will look to you as a second father. And if not, well, 4 years is a good long while, my lord. Long enough to dispose of Lord Stannis. Then should Joffrey prove troublesome, we can reveal his little secret and put Lord Renly on the throne. We? Ned repeated. Littlefinger gave a shrug. You'll need someone to share your burdens. I assure you my price would be modest. Your price? Ned's voice was ice. Lord Baelish, what you suggest is treason. Only if we lose. You forget, Ned told him. You forget John Arryn. You forget Jorry Cassell. And you forget this. He drew the dagger and laid it on the table between them. A length of dragon bone and Valyrian steel, as sharp as the difference between right and wrong, between true and false, between life and death. They sent a man to cut my son's throat, Lord Baelish. Littlefinger sighed. I fear I did forget, my lord. Pray forgive me. For a moment I did not remember that I was talking to a Stark. His mouth quirked. So it will be Stannis and war. It is not a choice. Stannis is the heir.
Far be it from me to dispute the Lord Protector. What would you have of me, then? Not my wisdom, for a certainty.
I shall do my best to forget your wisdom, Ned said, with distaste. I called you here to ask for the help you promised Catelyn. This is a perilous hour for all of us. Robert has named me protector, true enough, but in the eyes of the world, Joffrey is still his son and heir. The Queen has 12 knights and 100 men-at-arms that will do whatever she commands, enough to overwhelm what remains of my own household guard. And for all I know, her brother Jaime may be riding for King's Landing even as we speak, with a Lannister host at his back.
And you, without an army? Littlefinger toyed with a dagger on the table, turning it slowly with a finger. There is small love lost between Lord Renly and the Lannisters. Bronze Yon Royce, Sir Balon Swan, Sir Loras, Lady Tender, and the Redwine twins, each of them has a retinue of knights and sworn swords here at court. Renly has 30 men in his personal guard, the rest even fewer. It is not enough. Even if I could be certain that all of them will choose to give me their allegiance, I must have the gold cloaks. The city watch is 2,000 strong, sworn to defend the castle, the city, and the king's peace.
Ah, but when the queen proclaims one king and hand another, whose peace do they protect?
Lord Petar flicked at the dagger with his finger, setting it spinning in place. Round and round it went, wobbling as it turned. When at last it slowed to a stop, the blade pointed at Littlefinger.
Why, there's your answer, he said, smiling. They follow the man who pays them.
He leaned back and looked Ned full in the face, his grey-green eyes bright with mockery.
You wear your honour like a suit of armour, Stark. You think it keeps you safe, but all it does is weigh you down and make it hard for you to move.
Look at you now. You know why you summoned me here. You know what you want to ask me to do. You know it has to be done, but it's not honourable. So the words stick in your throat. Ned's neck was rigid with tension. For a moment he was so angry that he did not trust himself to speak. Littlefinger laughed. I ought to make you sad, but that would be cruel. So have no fear, my good lord. For the sake of the love I bear for Catelyn, I will go to Janus Slint this very hour and make certain the city watch is yours. 6,000 gold pieces should do it. A third for the commander, a third for the officers, a third for the men. We might be able to buy them for half that much, but I prefer not to take chances. Smiling, he plucked up the dagger and offered it to Ned, hilt first.
Tyrion. Lot 97. The auctioneer snapped his whip. A pair of dwarfs, well trained for your amusement. The auction block had been thrown up where the broad brown Skahazadan floated into Slaver's Bay. Tyrion Lannister could smell the salt in the air, mingled with a stink from the latrine ditches behind the slave pens. He did not mind the heat so much as he did the damp. The very air seemed to weigh him down, like a warm, wet blanket across his head and shoulders. "Dog and pig included in lot," the auctioneer announced. "The dwarfs ride them. Delight the guests at your next feast, or use them for a folly." The bidder sat on wooden benches, sipping fruit drinks. A few were being fanned by slaves. Many wore tokars, that peculiar garment beloved by the old blood of Slaver's Bay, as elegant as it was impractical. Others dressed more plainly, men in tunics and hooded cloaks, women in coloured silks. Whores or priestesses, most like. This far east, it was hard to tell the two apart. Back behind the benches, trading japes and making mock of the proceedings, stood a clot of Westerners. "Sell swords," Tyrion knew. He spied longswords, dirks, and daggers, a brace of throwing axes, mail beneath their cloaks. Their hair and beards and faces marked most for men of the free cities, but here and there were a few who might have been Westerosi. "Are they buying, or did they just turn up for the show?" "Who will open for this pair?" 300, bid a matron on an antique palanquin. 4, called a monstrously fat Yunkishman from the litter where he sprawled like a leviathan. Covered all in yellow silk, fringed with gold, he looked as large as 4 Illyrios. Tyrion pitied the slaves who had to carry him. "At least we will be spared that duty. What joy to be a dwarf!"
"And one," said a crone in a violet tokar.
The auctioneer gave her a sour look, but did not disallow the bid. The slave sailors of the Salisori Koran, sold singly, had gone for prices ranging from 500 to 900 pieces of silver. Seasoned seamen were a valuable commodity. None had put up any sort of fight when the slavers boarded their crippled cog. For them this was just a change of owner. The ship's mates had been freemen, but the widow of the waterfront had written them a binder, promising to stand their ransom in such a case as this. The 3 surviving Fiery Fingers had not been sold yet, but they were chattels of the Lord of Light and could count on being bought back by some red temple. The flames tattooed upon their faces were their binders. Tyrion and Penny had no such reassurance.
450, came the bid.
480.
500.
Some bids were called out in High Valyrian, some in the mongrel tongue of Gis. A few buyers signalled with a finger, the twist of a wrist, or the wave of a painted fan.
"I'm glad they're keeping us together," Penny whispered.
The slave trader shot them a look.
"No talk!"
Tyrion gave Penny's shoulder a squeeze. Strands of hair, pale blonde and black, clung to his brow, the rags of his tunic to his back. Some of that was sweat, some dry.